Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Carvery with Alex Store. Thank you all for jumping into another episode where we're carving away the drama from our lives. Because again, that's what the Carvery is all about, is this belief that success, happiness, innovation, collaboration, teamwork, basically all that you desire will be your natural state once the drama's gone. And so in this episode and in this podcast, we're never trying to add things into your life. We're simply trying to carve away what really gets in the way, what snags you up, because your natural state will be revealed and it's all really that you desire. And today is no different than any of the other episodes. We're ditching more drama, except for this time I was able to be on a podcast recently that was all about redesigning workplace wellness. And I just love this idea of looking at our own wellness at work, which then will lead to more wellness in life. Since, as many of you know, we spend 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day at work. And so if we're not well there, we're not going to be able to be very well in life. And so I really loved some of the questions that were asked on this podcast. I wanted to share the 30 minutes of recording I got with you so you could get a flavor of what the full episode was like, which is about an hour long. So I'll share that with you once I get it. But I wanted to give you guys some of this information. I thought we got into some really fun topics and some practical advice to ditch the drama at work and to just live more well at work. A lot of our techniques are for you to feel better at work, which will then lead to results. So I hope you really enjoy this podcast. Would love to know what you think about it. And please share this with anyone else that you think it would be helpful with. Get them connected in and have them start joining the Carvery. It is a listening party going on with this idea of ditching the drama at work and in the world. So enjoy and let's get started. Here comes the podcast.
Everyone on the same page by telling us, what is reality-based leadership?
Yeah, I think that's a good starting point there. So reality-based leadership really is what we're calling just a modern approach to leadership that is really kind of sweeping across the nation and the world in some ways. And we really call it an evolved leadership philosophy that focuses on just one concept, and it's the idea of drama in the workplace. And what's so exciting about that is in our work about 20 years ago with reality-based leadership, we found that the average person spent about 2 hours per day in drama. That's 2 hours per day walking around going, working hard, but in their minds going, this is sick and wrong. This shouldn't be happening. This is no way to run an organization. This is absolutely ridiculous. I wouldn't have made that decision. Gossiping, tattling, venting, resisting change, scorekeeping. And that was just an enormous discovery for us because, you know, 2 hours per day just lost off kind of your time and energy and off the bottom line. And we thought it was kind of a amazing discovery for the workplace, terrifying in one way, but amazing because it was a big opportunity to really look at ways in which we're thinking and behaving at work and ways in which we're leading and seeing where that's really wearing us out and really going against our well-being and our own wellness. And it was exciting because our founder really started training on conventional leadership wisdoms. She wanted to see if they were actually working, if they were reducing drama or fueling drama. And that really started our whole spreading of this message of reality-based leadership in helping to ditch the drama from the workplace. But what's been really fun is that was 20 years ago, and we had just revalidated some of our research in 2016. And there's been more investment in kind of skilling up our leaders and employees around, you know, accountability and change and work-life balance and all of these great programs. There's been a big investment in that. And so we thought that if everybody's getting skilled up, the amount of drama should go down. And what we have found is that it's now about 2.5 hours per day in drama. And so it's gone up by a half hour, even though we're investing more time in training. And so reality-based leadership, really, to sum it up, given some of those figures, is we're really questioning some of our conventional leadership wisdoms to see if they're actually fueling drama or helping to reduce it. And it's really become a full-on training and a full-on movement in many organizations. to help just identify where drama is coming from and to redirect that energy and upcycle it into better results and happiness and engagement, a lot of the things we're working on out there. And so I know that's not a succinct way to put it, but it's usually the best way to throw it out there is really just focusing on ditching the drama through our leadership in the workplace.
Yes. Oh my God, that's nuts that it went up a half hour
yeah.
per day. Because God, 2.5 hours. And that was just work, right? I mean, I'm guessing you didn't get to the personal.
Yeah, that's the funny part.
And they're like spewing all of the venting to their loved ones.
In our sessions, we usually throw that out there. We're like, and we just studied at work. And so we didn't get a chance to check out what's going on at home. But when you think about that, I mean, that energy is then coming in, you know, the moment, or unless you're really good at getting neutral before you walk into your house at home, you know, once you get home with your kids and your spouse or your families. And so we think it's a big, big opportunity, because what if work got a bit more effortless and you didn't have to change all that much, but your approach and your thinking? And some people are catching on and realizing that it doesn't have to be so hard every single day, and it's not a grind like we all think it is. And we even have found a lot of our suffering at work's pretty optional, and we'll talk more about that probably today. But we think it's a big, big deal, and it really gets us fired up to be able to share some of these ideas.
Yeah, so this just reminds me of when I was leading a larger team in corporate America before I left, and I'm a no drama person, or at least I like to think I am. But then I kept hearing these little like rumblings that people were, you know, kind of just, there was drama going on in the team, and I was so frustrated because I was like, God, can we just not work? Like, I don't want to deal with any of this stuff, but it happens. And so when you said that you guys are looking into or have looked into how some of the conventional leadership approaches, are they fueling the drama? Is there anything more that you could expand on? Have you found that some of the things that we do as leaders actually, you know, fuel the drama?
Yeah, I can give a couple examples. But the first thing I'd say about that, what you said, is most people are like, oh, we don't have drama on our team. And then they start to feel that. And what we joke of is there's only three ways that drama can get into an environment or a system, let's say the workplace. One, you hired it. So in the hiring process, someone looked like they could be a little bit of a hot mess, but you're like, oh, we need a warm body in this position, so let's hire them anyway and hope they kind of have a spiritual awakening over the weekend. So, you know, you hired it. Yeah, the second one is you enable it. And so as leaders, a lot of times, and we'll talk about, we enable drama instead of addressing it. And the third one's the really tough one. You are it. And so a lot of people aren't sure where it comes from. And those are really the only three ways we see drama get into the system. And so we try and help with not hiring it, obviously. But a lot of our work is on where do leaders actually enable it by oftentimes believing some conventional leadership wisdoms. And then the third one, obviously, we work on all of us upping our consciousness to realize if we're the ones causing it. And so that's kind of where to start, is with ourselves before we go out and try and help others. But into your question about some common ways we see leaders fueling drama, I'll give you a simple one, which is many times when leaders get promoted, they're really come to this belief that they need to be really approachable in a way that they need to keep an open door. And so many leaders are like, I'm an open book. When you got something, I'm here to help, so come find me. And what we found in our work is that those open doors really become portals for drama. Because the typical, hey, do you got a minute meeting? And as an approachable leader, you're like, yep, I got a minute. In fact, I got 2 minutes for you, so what do you got for me? Well, some of you might be giggling, listeners, that the typical, hey, do you got a minute, is not 1 minute. The first thing you might realize is your team, you know, good people, but they're liars. Because they actually need about 35 to 45 minutes. And the typical topic is hearsay, speculation, people not present, things that never happened, things that could never happen. And the typical conclusion is, please don't do anything. I just wanted you to know. And when you look at both of us spending 45 minutes of time and energy and coming out with, please don't do anything, I just wanted you to know, there is really a big loss of resources there. And that happens more and more than we could ever imagine. And so this keep an open door actually has become a portal for drama. We joke that no one ever comes into your office to tattle on themselves.
Nope.
Yeah, they never come in and say, hey, you know, Jen, I am really kind of unfit for human consumption, and I'm a poor, poor team player. Can you help me? like no one comes in and asks you in that kind of high level of accountability. It's usually about other people. And so that's one reason we see drama increasing is, you know, keep an open door because we think that's the way to do it. Now, we don't just disrupt and say, shut your door and, you know, don't let people like talk to you. But we give these little boundaries, we call them, where we found that drama is oftentimes from when people are using a very poor mental process. And so what we have found is that drama is just a form of waste in the workplace. And how do businesses get rid of inefficiencies or waste? They implement good processes. They go through process improvement to get better outcomes with less waste. Well, drama is just mental and emotional waste. So how do you get rid of mental and emotional waste? You facilitate and teach good mental processes. And so what's an example of a good mental process? If someone said, hey, do you got a minute? We teach leaders to say, yes, I do, but do you have an S-bar? Which is a mental template. It's, we actually grabbed it from healthcare. Nurses use this a lot, but it's, do you have an S-bar? And it's a simple acronym that the S is, what's the present situation? What are you coming to me for? Now that's gotta be one sentence or less. And why is that? Because you gotta get reflective. Like what is, if you had to nail what the reason you're coming to me for, what is it? It's hard to talk about the big long backstory when you gotta keep it to one sentence.
Do you actually say like situation, it needs to be in 1 to 2 sentences?
Yeah, like you teach this to your teams and then they start to know this is how they approach you. So, hey, do you got an S-bar? They'll have processed their work they're about to vent to you about or take them 45 minutes for. They'll come in instead and say, here's the situation. We had a poor IT conversion over the weekend. They keep it really short. And then the background is, you know, and then they go into the B, which is the relevant background. And so they go right through this in like a 2-minute little debrief for you. They say the relevant background, and we joke, we don't work for the History Channel. We don't need to know what happened in 1979 when we, you know, merged and we had all these things going on. We just,
that's the first thing that came to mind, Alex, was like, oh my God, you could get stuck in the background. Yeah. Like, I didn't say relevant background.
So we say the relevant background. Yeah. And then that's usually short as well. You know, why are you bringing this up? Is it part of the strategic plan? Is it something that might be illegal and immoral? Is it, you know, what's the relevant background? And then the A of the S-bar is analysis or assessment. And here's where your expertise comes in, not your opinion. So analysis is what's best practice. What does the research say? What does the marketplace say? Like, what's our strategic plan? It's all about assessment and critical thinking. And then the last thing is R, recommendations, plural. Now, when you're an ego and you're in your lowest self and you're frustrated and venting, you'll give 0 recommendations on how we can move forward or just 1, which is my way. This is the only way to do it. But we encourage people to give 3 or 4 good recommendations on how we could move forward. And each recommendation, you give us the risks and how to mitigate those or what we need to be thinking about. And then when that happens, which usually takes about 2 minutes once people get good at it instead of 45 minutes, guess what the leader has to do?
Nothing.
Says take recommendation 3. Can I count on you to do that? And then the person that had the problem says, oh, absolutely. You're taking my advice. I'll go do my advice. And you have more buy-in. And they came to you and they saw how they can think to go have impact. And so you didn't reinforce that they're at the mercy of their circumstances. You helped give them a way of thinking through their drama that leads to recommendations, that leads to impact. And so now they can go re-engage and feel amazing and well at work. And so that's one example, long way around, of where we see people fueling drama, because the average leader would listen to that and then get the whole, please don't do anything, I just wanted you to know, and they leave. And you're like, what the heck happened there? And so that just reinforces their victim mindset. Another one real quick is every leader we work with, all organizations, newsflash, are going through a lot of change. The world is moving fast. And we gave our first talk on change in 1989, saying it needed to be a core competency. That was what our founder was talking about. The other talk at this big conference was that the workplace of the future was going to have everybody keyboarding a core competency. You're going to have to know how to type. And so everyone here listening knows how to type. It's core competency. But if I asked you how many of us are exceptional at capitalizing on change, not a hand would go up in the whole world. And so we always joke, what other core competency would we give people 30 years to get good at? And that's what we've really done with change in the workplace. And you'll hear leaders roll out just the next thing, a new policy. And they're like, oh, you know, I know change is super hard. I know you guys got a lot on your plate. I know you're so, so busy. I know change just always is so difficult. And it's just a big myth out there that we have really busted. And so that's another one to give you a couple examples with some of our research. And so kind of exciting stuff. That's just a few that come to my mind.
All right. So I'm gonna dig into a little bit of this. So let's go back to SBAR, and then I'm going to go back to change in a minute.
Okay.
So how does it work with the whole team? Because I'm just imagining that when you were caught up in the typically going out with a lot of emotional mental waste, and that's just your mentality, and then a leader says, hey guys, we're going to put in this framework, here's our SBAR mental process, what are some challenges that come up for people, and how do leaders kind of go, you know, like not going to the drama, what's the background, like how do they keep them on track with this? Because it's just, it seems like a fantastic process and I love it. I'm just thinking about the people implementing this and some of the challenges maybe that can be hard for them to grasp.
Yeah, that's such a good question, because basically it helps to understand a little bit of the human mind to understand why a good mental process is so important. So I'll do that. Can I explain this? And then I'll give you like how to do this. Maybe that was kind of the 2.0. I'll give you the 1.0. So one thing that we teach in reality-based leadership is that people, another thing is they don't need time to vent. And everyone out there says, yeah, but people need time to get it off their chests. They need time to vent. And what we say is the number one thing from our sessions and our philosophy is that people do not need time to vent. We joke that venting feels good, but so does like crack cocaine, okay? But it's not a sustainable lifestyle. And we definitely don't want it at work, because when people are frustrated or complaining or venting, it carves a neural pathway that's fed by negativity. And in order to keep that from itching so much, you have to feed it with the same behavior that was used to create it. And that is more venting. And so when we allow people to vent, it begets more venting. And so when you say, hey, do you got a minute, and someone's about to vent, if we don't help get someone into a good mental process, they're gonna stay in this mode of venting and they're gonna come to you for more venting. And so it helps to understand that all of us, every single one of us, leaders or employees, we have a light switch on our forehead. Imagine a light switch, and it's either up or down. And when it's down, we are in what we call low self. We're in a poor mental process. We are into venting, complaining, scorekeeping. We're really in what we call ego, which is the biggest source of drama in the workplace. We're seeing the world through the lens of our ego. It's like we're in a pair of prescription glasses, but they're the wrong prescription. And so we're really having distorted view of the world. We're at the mercy of our circumstances. The circumstances are the reasons we can't succeed. And we're really in a victim mindset. Now, what's really cool about this light switch is in the same moment, you can flip up into what we call high self, which is the better part of your brain. It's beyond ego. It's where you're all about, really at the highest level of your licensure, of your skill set. You're really innovative, collaborative. You're all about teamwork. And the way to get there when you're in low self is through the simple act of self-reflection. And so when you're in low self and I'm like, people don't communicate with me and this is absolutely ridiculous and I wasn't consulted and this isn't fair. If a leader says, yeah, you're right and this stinks, that keeps us both in low self. But the way to flip someone up to high self is through self-reflection is, what a question like, what could you do to help? What would great look like? What do you know for sure? Any of these questions, they kind of force you to go from low self into high self. And if you're really good with this light switch, a leader can simply ask you when I'm venting, like they didn't communicate with me and this is an absolute disaster and they should be fired and this is absolutely ridiculous. And if my leader came up to me and said, Alex, what would great look like right now? If you were being great, the most perfect employee ever, what would that look like? And what happens is I have to drop all the venting, and it kind of flips me up to a different part of my brain. And if I was going to answer that question, it would be, well, I suppose I wouldn't be in here tattling about this person to you. I'd be on the phone trying to get it figured out. I would be communicating with them, and I would be doing what would be best for the customer. And what's funny about a question like what would great look like is it gets me into the better part of my brain. It flips me up to high self, into a good mental process where I can self-reflect and find my part in the mess. And then I can take those simple instructions and go add impact. And that is really where we start to feel well at work again. Now, the part I wanted to add about you're saying when someone's really stuck in complaining is this light switch might be a little bit rusted. In fact, it might be completely broken. And so when you try and flip it up with a good coaching question, they're like, what are you talking about? And they're just stuck in low self. We might want to start thinking about how to transition those people outside of our organization, because they're always going to be in this low self, believing that they're at the mercy of their circumstances. And so that those questions are one way before the SBAR. Another thing that's pretty powerful is if you have people that come to you to vent a lot and you're really a good listener and you believe that'll help people get well, what we recommend is keep a piece of paper or a pad around you to write on. And when someone comes in to vent, start just taking notes, but you only take notes of the facts you hear about the situation. And so let me give you an example of this that is always pretty powerful. So let's say that my boss calls to check on a project, and I'm an employee, and I come to you, Jen, and I'm going to tell you what really happened. And I go, yeah, you know, Steve called again to check on my project, and, you know, he asked me how I'm doing, and I was behind. And, you know, he realized I'm behind on a lot of things, and I don't know what this is about. They're looking for people to fire, and we're under budget cuts, and if they cut another one of my projects, that'll be the third one this year. And that, I think that means I'll get fired, and if I get fired, I got a kid in vet school that wants to help the pandas in East Asia, and now pandas in East Asia are going to die. Now, as my leader, you can be listening and approachable, but what I want you doing during that is writing down the facts that I say. And let's say that was a 30-minute vent session. Now, when I get done and you're like, is there anything else? I wasn't there. I'm just trying to get, you know, clear on what happened. And you show me the piece of paper and it just has my boss called to check on a project. I'm behind on the project and I got to present this on Thursday to the board. And I got a kid in med school or vet school. When I look at the facts on a piece of paper, it's reality. And I look at it and it's like four things. And I look at it, it's not painful. And so I start to realize that my stress and my frustration wasn't caused from my reality on the piece of paper. It was from the story I made up about reality. And so what you just did as a leader is put it down on paper, just the facts. So you cleaned up that drama for me and put it in a good mental process. And so I look at that and I'm like, oh, but you forgot some stuff. He's a micromanager that treats me like a child and that, you know, the pandas are gonna die. And you're like, I know we're close on that. I wasn't really there. I know some of that you said, but let's get down to like what we really know to be true. How close am I? And I might go, well, you're close. And then as leader, you say, given I'm close, what could you do to add value here? And I say, oh, I suppose I could get it buttoned up for Thursday. Perfect. Can I count on you to go do that? And so you just helped me think through that in 30 minutes, and now I'm out taking action. Now, let's say I come back next week, I'm going to vent again. What do you suppose you should do? Write it down on a piece of paper again. I start to vent about, oh, IT doesn't communicate and they should be fired. This is absolutely ridiculous. And you just write down the facts and it's like three sentences. And then you ask me, what could you do to add value? And I start to see that this is just going to be the way of it. We're going to use a good mental process. And then the third time I'm about to come vent to you and I see you pull out your piece of paper and I go, oh, she's just going to ask me, what do I know for sure? And what would great look like? I'm just going to skip all of that. And I'm just going to go be great. And what you have done is just given me the ultimate freedom, a way in which of thinking through my stress to go have impact so I can never disengage. And now I'm free at work. And so that's an example of helping people over time to move away from this behavior of venting.
And so does that have the ripple effect among team members? Because my first thought is the leader's taking such great control and really reframing the situation. And, you know, Alex, you're going to come to me and I'm going to see my notepad. But what's to stop that person from just going to go bitch and vent to somebody else? Or is that more of, okay, maybe you need to transition that person out of the team?
Jen, you're so on it. That is what we call human behavior. And so we have a whole model of this is the next level of shared accountability is as you're working on all of this, here's what's going to happen. When you're saying, what could you do to help? That person's in self-reflection. They're realizing that it's their piece of this where they can still have impact. So they're going to go to the next person, a best friend. And it's part of our accountability model where people will go to at the end of cultivating accountability, their own, they'll go to what we call sense-making mentors or lack thereof. Well, they'll find 2 to 3 people that they'll try and collude with to negate their own development. So they'll go to this person and say, oh, can you believe that, you know, I went in there and I had a thing I was complaining about and Jen just asked me a few questions and kind of put it back on me to go have impact. And she's kind of a terrible leader, isn't she? Like, she gave me some feedback that I was a little disruptive in a meeting. And she said, don't take my word for it. Check it out for myself. She wants me to video myself in this next meeting to see if I'm actually disruptive. You've had her as a leader. She's kind of a nightmare, right? And what that person says matters. And so if they collude with you and say, yeah, don't listen to Jen, she's the worst manager ever, then I just lost all of that opportunity for that person to take a peek at themselves to see if they could develop for themselves in something I have them working on. But if that person they go to has a nice elevator speech or just a standard line where they're like, you know, any feedback I've gotten in my career was a gift. It actually had some truth to it, and I always learn from it. Why don't you sit with that for a little while? That person that's self-reflecting will be like, oh, well, you don't know what you're talking about. They'll go to the next person, and they'll try it again. And what we find in human behavior in our research is they'll go to about 3 people. And if all 3 of those people stay firm and leave that space open to keep someone in self-reflection, then it'll finally be where it turns back in on the person to say, what should I look at myself to improve on that piece of feedback or in that situation? And that's a model we teach about hardwiring accountability. That's the main reason that accountability is so frustrating in the workplace, is because we get almost down to the bottom of it, and then we let our coworkers collude and let us off the hook. And so that's a whole nother fun chat we can do maybe another time, but that's where it falls off. So
I love that. I love that you guys know that it's like 3 people, and I just cannot imagine, like, once one person shuts me down, like, I've done this before, and like when one person kind of gets into their higher self and they show you that side, for me it's really almost embarrassing. You're like, okay, they're not playing into it. I need to just to stop. But yes, to go to 3 people is kind of insane.
Yeah,
that much time is wasted.
And there's little things that you can teach your teams to do. Like, if someone's like, oh, did you hear what Jen did over the weekend? She totally screwed up this project. Oh, Jen, I love Jen. What's going on with her? So you put like a little boundary there. And if they miss it and still say, yeah, well, Jen, you know, she should figure this out. She needs to up her skill set. Jen's a little behind on her skill set with this new program. What could we be doing to help? Well, I don't feel like helping. What are you talking about? Oh, well, I suppose I could do training for 20 minutes today after work. I'll stay over a little longer, or I'll go right now and teach her some stuff. I know the program pretty well. The person might go, well, that sounds like a lot of work. Oh, that sounds like a hot mess. I'm not getting involved. Okay, well, what are you doing for the 4th of July? Like, and then you just change the conversation. But there's these little techniques that you can teach your teams to have these boundaries where it's like, we're not going to be judging. And if we're getting out of our business, we're only going to be helping. And so I love Jen. And then what could we be doing to help? And then when that person's like, oh, I don't feel like helping, that sounds like a lot of work, it's like, perfect, let's get focused on this. And you just change the energy. And if you do that a couple times, you'll start to notice that the drama doesn't come to you as much. And you kind of help to dissipate it out of there. So,
yeah. Well, that's one of those questions that you brought up. Like, what would great look like? That does shift it in your mind, going, oh, crap, now I need to go be great.
Yeah.
But at least it's making you think, what are the steps? Is putting it kind of the ball back in your court? Or, you know, what can I do to help? Or, you know, just writing down the facts. Because we often, you just fill it in with a lot of either stuff we make up or stuff that is completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
So I love those questions. I think it's just like that.
And, oh, And sorry, yeah, something to add to that for your listeners, they might be like, sure, I'm going to ask what would great look like, and the person will be like, this wouldn't have happened. That's what great would look like. So, but what to know about that, if you think that's cheesy, is just take as an assignment for self-reflection all the times, listeners, when you're frustrated today, and then just pause. If I was being great right now, what would that look like? And just self-reflect on that. And what you'll find about your brain is that you always know what great looks like. People always know what great looks like. Now, the problem is we use that information for evil, not good. You know what great would look like? It's what Jen's not doing. Mm. It's what marketing hasn't been doing or what they should be doing. It's what, you know, operations should be doing. We use what would great look like as a standard in which to judge others. And you wouldn't know what great looks like. If you can compare, you know what great looks like because that's what you compare it to. That's what you use your comparison mind for. And so that question is so powerful as a personal assignment for self-reflection or question for self-reflection, but it's also really powerful if your teams are open to this because it redirects your energy back on to the customer, to the solution, or to the patient like this. Like it is a quick time saver. It's like a life hack. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so... want to go back to change in a minute, but now that we're on these people, like these people who just seem like they're the drama queens, kings, whatever you want to call them, the people are always just stirring up some mess. How much do you continue to try to get them, you know, you put the framework in place, you have your hardwire accountability, you set the boundaries, versus just going, this person doesn't want to change, this person can't change, their wiring is completely corroded, and we need to just move them out. Like, are some people just more hardwired for the drama?
Well, that's it for the first half of that podcast. I hope you guys loved some of the topics we got into, and I hope it got you really self-reflecting on certain things you're working on and looking at improving in your day-to-day at work. Please leave your comments on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's at Alex M. Dorr. Please let me know what you think about this. Share this podcast with anyone else that you think it could help with. And if you guys love what you're hearing on The Carvery, one of the best ways to get the word out there is to go on iTunes and give it a 5-star review or review it where you're listening to it and say what are some of the favorite things you've learned or some of your favorite episodes. Each 5-star review helps to spread the word and get more people ditching the drama. As you guys know, I love you guys so much. I really appreciate all of your ears and all of your cool comments and ideas you're sending over. Please keep those coming my way. And I'm on the road again, head to Seattle for another fun session, spreading the message of reality-based leadership and ditching the drama. And so I'm out of here. You guys know the deal. As always, let's keep ditching the drama.